Welcome to a TRL podcast. In this second instalment of our podcast series, addressing the future of vehicle automation, we continue to ask, how safe is safe enough? What do we need to do to get the driver out of the vehicle? How do we meet the projected benefits of automation? And how can we ensure and maintain road safety? We eavesdrop on a conversation between TRL experts. This time, we tackle the widely adopted practice of remote operation.
Ben, I know that you've done quite a lot of work on a couple of more recent projects into remote operation. And I wonder if you could just talk us through, you know, what do we mean by remote operation?
Yeah, of course. So remote operation is an umbrella term, really. It encompasses lots of things. From a definition standpoint, remote operation is providing the support functions to an automated vehicle or a fleet of automated vehicles. And the differences between the different types of remote operation really come into play when you look at the nature of that support. And so, as you've picked up there, Camilla, remote driving is one of those types, and that's where you have a remote operator in full control of the vehicle, but from a remote location. And then you have other slightly more hands-off modes of assistance, which we would call remote vehicle assistance. And that might be providing an update to an automated vehicle's path, or helping it to classify an object if it was stuck, say, in a particularly complex scenario, such as a temporary roadworks, and it wasn't able to fully comprehend its environment. There are also lots of other things to consider with remote operation. You know, for example, the environment in which we're conducting it. So, you know, are we looking at doing this on motorways or in city centres and shared spaces? It really does cover a lot of different things.
Do we think that remote driving is part of our future? And is remote driving safe enough for public roads?
The question of is remote driving safe enough, I think because remote driving itself includes slightly different configurations and in lots of different environments. Fundamentally, the answer is it depends. And it depends on the environment, it depends on the particular configuration of the system. But ultimately, this needs to be a data-driven decision. We have thoughts at this stage on what is suitable for remote operation and remote driving. Camilla, I know you and I have had conversations in the past about concerns over sustained periods of remote driving, certainly in complex environments such as a city centre. But ultimately, there isn't the evidence to back that up one way or another. And so what we need is more testing around the application, I suppose. I think something we can do at the moment is we can set system level performance requirements for a vehicle operating in a particular environment, and it's then up to the developer to meet those requirements, whether that vehicle is being driven by an in-vehicle driver, a remote operator from a remote location, or an automated driving system. And so by doing more testing with those different types of configuration, we can then come to that answer of, can we meet those system level performance requirements, and therefore are we safe enough?
Ben, you raised that earlier. I think it's a very interesting point, and it ties back to what Will was mentioning earlier about, do we want to beat the safety standard we have at the moment, or are we okay with meeting it? And do we think that if you're essentially having the same level of control over the vehicle but from a remote location, we're going to have the same level of safety, or do you think we're going to put ourselves in a worse situation by introducing those sorts of operators?
It's a good question. My gut tells me that by introducing the additional aspects of a remote system, so, you know, difficulty, in understanding your environment from looking at screens rather than being in the vehicle, additional latency and of information coming into the operator and the control that they're providing to the vehicle. I think there's a good chance that you might introduce more challenges and have a lower level of safety. One of the things to note, and perhaps in defense of remote driving, is if we're looking at this for an automated vehicle that calls upon a remote operator for short periods of remote driving, perhaps to go around an obstacle or in difficult environmental conditions, then if you look at the mode of operation as a whole, where you have 99% automated driving, 1% remote driving from a human, then even if we are introducing slightly more error for that 1%, then holistically, you're still looking at being safer than a human driver.
So Ben, that was an interesting point. So do you see remote operation and to an extent remote driving almost as a stepping stone to getting to deployment or getting to deployment earlier? Because then obviously you've now got the ability to handle those complex scenarios that maybe an automated vehicle can't, those edge cases scenarios that an automated vehicle can't handle. So is that where you see remote driving fitting, or do you think it's part of that longer term service and operation of automated vehicles?
Yeah, I think certainly for remote driving, I personally see that as a stepping stone, as a validation piece and increasing the reliability of automated vehicles. Because I think there's two aspects here, really. There's the capability of the system to perform the driving task, and there's the reliability of that system to perform that task, you know, anywhere, anytime, under any conditions. And so I certainly do think that remote operation as a whole is a way of reaching those benefits of automated vehicles before such a time as the vehicle is capable of operating in 100% of conditions.
And Will, has that been included in-use safety monitoring, remote operation, and that sort of stepping stone to fully autonomous vehicles? You know, is that included as part of that monitoring process?
Yeah, it's definitely something we're considering. At the moment, remote operation doesn't exist in a large way in terms of vehicles that are all, you know, nearing deployment and are ready for approval. So in-use monitoring is looking at really what are the risks with remote operation, you know. And as I said, I think more testing is needed and trials and real world operation is needed to actually understand what those risks are. But really, if we look at it, we're looking at the connection risk, the risk of latency and connection dropouts. We're also looking at the risk of situational awareness. How long does it take the driver or the operator to actually understand their environment and take control of the system? And really, I think the remote operator is going to become part of that system. It is part of the automated vehicle system if it has a role to play for safety. So in-use monitoring absolutely has to monitor their performance just as it would the automated vehicle.
And Ollie, is it possible to then validate that sort of in-use safety monitoring or validate remote operation and the performance and reliability of remote operation within SMLL?
Absolutely. And I was going to mention that when I was monitoring one of the roadside cameras we've got around the Smart Busy Living Lab facility the other day, and I think I witnessed a really interesting scenario where the remote operation would have had to play a part if an automated vehicle got itself in that scenario. And it was where three vehicles had just gone over a mini roundabout and a bus was coming head on towards them. And those vehicles had to reverse back onto mini roundabout to allow the bus to come back through to allow them to pass through. And for an automated vehicle to understand what to do in that situation, I just found it, I saw it as an impossible task without some sort of human intervention. And so for the remote operator to understand that environment well enough, to understand that it's safe enough to reverse back onto that roundabout to allow that bus to come through, and for it to understand that it needs to reverse back in the first place is the most difficult bit. And encountering scenarios like that is something that's so difficult. An edge case scenario like that is so difficult to replicate in a controlled environment, just because you won't think of those different scenarios that happen in the operating environment where these vehicles are actually going to be operating. So yeah, validation of this type of technology in a real world is essential when you're coming across those scenarios that you just would never think of in a controlled or proving ground type environment.
And I suppose the more edge cases you come across and the more that scenario database is increased, the more we can improve safety, which goes back to Will's point of this is an improving picture. You know, maybe initially it's okay to say they are as safe as a human-driven vehicle, but we would want to progress that over time and to continuously improve the level of safety and operation on our road network.
Absolutely, yes. Scenarios are one of those things that us within the Smart Mobility Living Lab team, we have a very good understanding of the operating environment where the test facility is. As it's on public roads, we have a good understanding of where certain scenarios happen. But we're always learning as a team. We're always finding new edge case scenarios that are happening. And I think it just demonstrates that you'll never have a complete list of scenarios, a complete list of like weird scenarios that happen on our roads. That you'll never get a complete picture of that. But
we will take a pause here. In the next episode, the team tackles the central question: how safe is safe enough? Thank you for listening.